We're doing Mishlei. We're up to, it's called the 27th chapter, the 7th Pasuk. So we're doing Mishlei. We're up to the 27th, what they call the 27th chapter, the 7th Pasuk. Nefesh Sivei'ah Tavus Nofet. When a person is full, Nefesh Sivei'ah, Sivei'ah. Person is satiated. So then, Tavus, he feels like you're force feeding him, even if you're giving him Nofet, sweet things. A person still feels like, why are you pushing food down my throat if he feels full? I don't need anything else, I'm full. V'nefesh reiva kol mar matok. Yet when a person's hungry, so then even bitter foods are yummy to them, right? This is human nature. Again, on the simple level, our appetite defines how we view what we're offered. If we have a strong appetite, so even things that are not so delicious are delicious. And if we're full, so then even delicious food is not so satiating. I'm not interested, I'm full. Okay, so that's a rule. Simple application of the rule. Shabbat in the winter months, if you eat the morning meal at 11 o'clock and you fill yourself with chul until 1, then chances are if sun sets at 4:30, 4:40, you don't yet have an appetite. So bear that in mind. You might want to cut down on your meal, the morning meal, leave some room for the third meal. Otherwise, you won't enjoy it. But Chazal tell us that the Pasuk is also speaking about our spiritual approach to things. If we approach learning things with the idea, I know it, I've already learned this, so then you're going to have a hard time sticking it in. Information is absorbed with direct correlation to how interested you are. If you feel like, I got to get this, I don't know this, this is important to me, so then learning is interesting. And if you walk in and I learned Parshas Yisro already, 10 commandments, I know that. So then it's hard to absorb. A lot of our absorption depends on our attitude. Okay, do we want to take this another step? Let's take it one step further. So this also affects us as educators. Meaning, it's not only about the content you have to offer, it's also about how you can arouse people's interest. It's one thing to say, this is what the verse says. It's another thing to walk in and say, we're about to read something fascinating. I'm not sure everyone here will have the ability to grasp this. If you work hard, you might actually get this. We're about to learn something that'll change your life. Okay, now I'm interested. The truth is that this verse could change your life. Nefesh Sivei'ah, if you approach it, I'm full. Tavus Nofet, and even the sweetest things are, you're force feeding me, I'm not hungry. Menefesh Reiva, but the hungry soul, Kol Mar Matok, even bitter things are sweet. Kitzipo, Nodedet Min Kinah, just like a bird that is shifting from its nest, Kein ish noded mimikomo, so too is a man that has to shift from his place. You guys are men. This pasuk is teaching us a very important rule about the nature of man, more so than woman. Very interesting. You need a place. You have to have a place that's yours. Man must have his space. I need my cave. So, yes, it can be a cave, but you need your space. Children will make a clubhouse. Children will make a secret hideout. Sometimes they'll take a little box, you know, someone threw out their fridge, they'll put in the corner of the yard, and then they'll have their little hiding place where they put their stuff. Because I need my space. Men need their space, more so than women. It's very interesting. The Gemara says, Ish noded mimekomo. The Talmud says, traveling is harder on a man than a woman. You'd think the other way, right? Talmud says, no. From this pasuk we see, a man needs a home. Now, it could be he can't have a home without a woman, right? She's the one that makes it into a home. But man needs that. And there's a certain skill to doing that. Very often, guys, especially bachelors, feel like, oh, I don't have to invest in this place. I come in, I put my head down, I get up, I leave. But if you'd invest, if you'd put up a nice mirror, you'd put a nice rug, you'd get decent dishes, you'd wash the dishes before you go to sleep at night, you'd walk in and you'd have space that's comfortable to look at, you'd feel like you have a home. And that gives a person a sense of tranquility. We need a home. We need a place that's mine. That's my place. And the pasuk says, just like a bird that's traveling from its nest, it's traveling, but at the end of the day, it wants to go back to its nest. So too is a Talmid Chacham. So too is a man who travels from his place. Chazal tell us, what's it talking about? What's the deeper meaning to the pasuk? It's talking about a person who stops learning. Person sometimes says, I'm going to deal with something, I'll get back to it. You should know your soul is not at rest. Your soul has to have a constant of learning. And when you move and say, I'm just going to take this period off, doesn't work. Your soul needs this. Give it its feed for the day. Whatever time it needs, give it its constant. There should be learning which I review, learning which I learn. It could be parsha. It could be two halachos a day. But there's something, your soul needs that connection. Don't think you can just go wandering and I'll get back to Torah in 2 years. No, you're going to hurt. You might dull your soul. You're not going to be, you're like a bird that's traveling, waiting for its resting place in its nest. So that's what Chazal said is the deeper meaning to the pasuk. Very interesting. We once had a bird build its nest next to my kids' bed, like at the window just outside their bed. And I grew up, they always told us that birds' nests have lice. So I thought it was an old wives' tale. So then the bird laid eggs there. And then I started realizing that, I don't know, maybe it's not an old wives' tale. So someone told me that birds bring all kinds of diseases. You don't want to do it. It was a window right next to their bed. So one day the bird was away, and I took a broom and I pushed off the nest off the windowsill. And the very next day everyone broke out with lice. So I decided it's not an old wives' tale. When I opened the window, must be lice came crawling in from the bird's nest, which was interesting. Like the next day, all my kids have lice. We have lice all over the house. We didn't have lice beforehand, so that was like interesting. Point number one. Point number two was, we were a high floor. So I couldn't figure out a way to save that nest other than pushing it off the ledge. And I remember the kids called me to see when the bird came back and looked for its nest. And to see that sad look in the bird's eye, looking like, where did my nest go? It was heartbreaking. I felt bad. I said, couldn't I have figured out a better way to do it? And then when everyone broke out in lice, I said, oh boy, and had I carried that nest through the house, who knows what I would have done. But Chazal tell us, the example of one who's connected to its home is the bird and its nest. When a bird leaves its nest, it wants to come back to the nest. That's the example of connection to a home. Pasuk Tet. Shemen uktoret yisamach lev. Good oils. Good incense that's burnt. So even though technically it's external, but it makes one's heart happy. Umetek reyeyu matzat nafesh. And you should know that another thing that makes one's heart really happy is the sweetness of a friend when it is me'atzat nafesh, when you're hearing his soul talk. Sometimes you have people who are nice to you, but you're not really connected. They're being nice, but is there a real connection? Is their soul talking to yours, or is it just he's nice? He's nice to me. He's nice to everyone. He's a nice guy. Does he care about me? Metek reyeu, the sweetness of a friend, me'atzat nafesh, when it comes from the thoughts of his soul, when there's a real connection. People want to be popular. We all want to be popular. We want people to think positively about us. But that's only one litmus test. We also need a good friend. One good friend. Two good friends. You can't have 10 good friends. At least not at one time in your lifetime. But you need a good friend. And a good friend makes it that life is sweet. it's just like we understand that you smear good oils, you smell good oils, you smell good incense. So it makes you happy. There's something pleasant about it. You should know there's a pleasantness to life when you could run through life with a good friend. And people hope to find that in marriage. Most people don't. It's a tragic thing. Most people don't find it in marriage. And as hard as they try, it takes two to figure out how to build it. It's not as simple as we would think it should be. You think that it's an obvious, easy thing, right? You married the person, you're building all of life together. It should be that way. It doesn't happen. The natural course of marriage does not run this course. So, A, you should learn how to make your marriage better. And B, you should also have friends. Both are important. Marriage is not a substitute for friendship. You need good friends. You also need to work on marriage and hopefully build it in that direction. So there are many interpretations Chazal give to the pasuk. The pasuk has many levels of interpretation, but let's leave it with that one. Pasuk Yud. Re'acha v're'a avicha al tazov. Your friend and your father's friend, don't leave. Don't leave. You have friends. You have friends of the family. Don't turn your back on them. Friendship is hard to come by. If you already have a friend, if your family already has a friend, don't turn your back on it. So, Chazal said there's another level over here. It's talking about the Ribon Shel Olam. Who's your friend and your father's friend? That's the Ribon Shel Olam. Hashem is called the friend of Israel. So, Re'acha v're'a avicha al tazov, uveit achicha al tavo b'yomeidecha. Don't go to your brother when you have problems. So Chazal say, which brother is this talking about? This is talking about Esav and Yishmael. Esav and Yishmael, people of Israel thought they can rely on their peace treaties with Esav, on their peace treaties with Yishmael. Ultimately, our greatest downfall was when Esav turned his back on us and destroyed the Beit HaMikdash. Our peace treaties, you know, there were fights within the Herodian dynasty. They went to the Caesar and they decided he should decide who should be king. And they made a peace treaty with Rome, and it lasted a century. After a century, the Romans took over and we lost our sovereignty. So you have problems. It's tempting to go to your brother's house. The pasuk mourns, you look at what will happen with Esav, and the same thing with Yishmael. The first Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. The Jews said, take us next to the Yishmaelites. They're our relatives. They'll take good care of us. And they hurt us even more. So that's how Chazal interpret the pasuk. Tov shachein karov me'ach rachok. Better a close neighbor than a distant brother. Your brother is far away. What are you going to do? But if make sure to develop your relationship with your neighbors. At the end of the day, on your day-to-day, and when problems really arise, it's your neighbors that are there for you. You want them to be there for you. You deal with the challenges of life with your neighbors. You wake up in the middle of the night, you discover you have to take someone to the hospital. It could be a spouse, it could be a child. You need someone to take over the house. It's your neighbors that can help you. You know, neighbors doesn't only mean the house next door. Neighbor could mean your coworkers. The people who are close to you on the day-to-day, those are the people at the end of the day, you can be there for them, and they can be there for you. And that's the relationship you want. People sometimes think, I have a powerful brother, my brother's a millionaire. Right, but in the middle of the night, when you'll need someone, you need your neighbor. In life, dealing with the to and fro of life, you need your neighbors. It boggles my mind that there are communities where people have no clue who their neighbors are. People don't know. I have no idea who my neighbor is.
They never talk to them.
Yeah, it's sad. I don't know how people manage in life. I'm saying,
you need some sugar, you need some milk.
Yeah.
Work on yourself.
But you don't really know that enough adds to the value of it.
But reality, I'm saying, there's reality. People have to go to the hospital sometimes in the middle of the night. What are you going to do? Take all your kids with you? I'm saying that people have needs. We are mortal. I don't know. Chazal say, don't underestimate long-term relationships. Person says, if I have problems, I could go to my brother. If you have a long-term relationship, your father's had a good relationship with this family, you have a good relationship with this family, at the end of the day, people who have proven themselves can often be counted on more than your brother who lives far away, and you might discover that when you show up, he says, hey, I got problems of my own, go deal. If you have a neighbor and you have a friend, and this is a friend of the family's, so the Pasuk saying that has tremendous value. Very often, we tend to believe that our relatives will stand by us much more than they really will. There's this false confidence that people tell themselves, if I really need to, so-and-so will take care of me. Look at world history, and you'll see that very often so-and-so did not take care of their relatives. Very often people had a rude awakening when they assumed they could lean on a relative, and they showed up and that relative was not there for them. I heard I don't remember all the details of the story, but it went along the lines of there were two sisters-in-law that didn't get along. And they didn't get along, And then the Holocaust broke out. And one of them didn't have food, but she heard that the other sister-in-law had food and she was helping the poor. So she made her way to her sister-in-law. And her sister-in-law basically said no. She left the door locked and she said, I'm not helping you. And I don't know if the one who was locked out made it out of the war alive. I don't remember the end of the story. But it's a phenomenal story. I mean, so the two didn't get along. She's your sister-in-law. I mean, you'd think... right, she's helping the poor. She said, I'm feeding other poor. I'm not feeding you. She said, I have to save lives. Who said, I have to save yours? Right? Yeah. I don't remember the end of the story. I heard it from one of their relatives, but I don't remember the details. You see, it's a story that stuck with me since... Right? No. I heard from people in the family. So the Pasuk's warning us, don't put too much confidence in your brother. If your brother is close by, if you have an ongoing relationship, that's one thing. But don't assume that you have problems. You could show up at your brother's door and say, hey, can you take me in? So we'd like to think we would do that for our siblings. Hopefully we will. Hopefully they won't need it. We'd like to think we're there for them. The Pasuk says, remember, in their days they didn't have Skype, they didn't have mail. Could be you didn't see your brother for 10 years and you really had zero contact with one another. The Pasuk warns you, don't assume you could just show up at his house one day when things go bad. The Pasuk says, I don't recommend doing it. Hold on to your local friends. There you know what your relationship is like. You'll show up by your brother who you haven't seen in 10 years, you haven't spoken to in 10 years. Who knows where his life is holding and if he'll be there for you. Work with what you have in your neighborhood. Today, it's a little different. We can maintain contact long distance. We can talk. I try to call my brothers. They call me. We maintain a relationship, even though we're on different continents. We talk to one another. I recommend you do that. I mean, you're closer, you're less close.
There's like a more natural bond. I mean, even if you haven't seen family for a long time, you're excited in a different way to see them when you see them, even if you haven't talked for a long time.
So in modern Israel, they read this pasuk differently. The pasuk says, this is a modern Israeli thing, which is against the pasuk, but Today, in modern times, people feel like you said. People say blood is not water, and your relatives, your blood relatives, will take care of you, and it's definitely the way it should be.
I'm not talking about taking care. I'm talking about your health and natural connection. Like,
I agree.
You haven't talked so much, but if you like meet for a reunion, you like you feel like when you talk to them, you have your connection.
Our question here is: will they be there for you? And here the Pasuk's recommending don't rely on it if you haven't seen them in a while. If they're far away and you have no idea what's doing with them, don't just show up at the door because you have a problem. You have no idea if they'll be there for you. That's what the Pasuk's talking about. So today, where we do have a connection, and even if our brothers live far away, you could talk to them on a daily basis. It used to be a time, I would say it's cheaper for me to call the United States and talk to my brothers than to call my next door neighbor. Because I had a flat rate calling the United States, it didn't cost me per call or per minute. And in Israel, it cost me per call. That used to be the case 10 years ago. So in modern Israel, they read the pasuk like this way. Tov, shachin, karov. It's good to have a close neighbor, but you should know, me'ach, rachok. He's far from being a brother. A brother is always better. That's how they like reading it in Israel. But that's a play on words. I think the reason is because today we do have a contact with him. It's not that you haven't spoken to him in 10 years. Today you're connected. Pasuk Yud Aleph.
So this might just be people with English, but also distant folks. Couldn't that just mean that the relationship with them? So,
it could.
In English, you know, like,
yes.
Your close neighbor, someone you develop this close relationship with, it doesn't mean it's necessarily anything near you, even though that neighbor implies that.
Yeah.
Right. Yosef was greatly excited to see Benjamin after 17 years.
What he's saying is alluded to in Chazal, that better a close neighbor than a distant brother is not a question of kilometers, it's a question of feeling. Are you close to your neighbor? Are you close to your brother? That is alluded to in Chazal, yeah.
Halachically,
yes, the halacha says we have a responsibility to take care of our family first, even in the laws of tzedakah and charity. Definitely. If a person asks the halacha, then yes. Right. Even if you don't like him, right? Even if you don't like him, the halacha says family should stand by one another. Yes. Yes. When people ask me, very often we go over the laws of how to allocate people's tzedakah money. So the first question I ask them is, do you have a relative that's in need? And they'll say, yeah, but they live in Nebraska. And I'll go, but they're still your brother. Like, yeah, we don't get along so well. They're still your brother, so? Right? Right, you're right. The halacha definitely views it that way, that relatives come first, yeah. Chacham bini, be wise, my son. V'samach libi, and then my heart will be happy with you. V'ashiva chorefi, davar. And then, if people try to curse me out over your behavior, I'll be able to answer them. If a person has a son that's misbehaving a lot, he's not so smart, so then when people curse him out, and they say, you know, your son's such and such and such and such, he's embarrassed, he's got nothing to answer. They come in and they say, you know what your son did? So he's stuck. But if a person has a son that's smart and he behaves the way he should, then they come and they say, you know what your son did? And he goes, I don't know, but I'm not too worried. So that's Shlomo Amel says, be wise, my son, and my heart will be happy. And then even if people try to shame me over you, I won't be embarrassed. I'll be able to have my confidence in you. The pasuk here, we have to really visit the pshat of the pasuk for a minute. Who is Shlomo HaMelech talking to? Which son is he talking to? Who's he talking to? He's saying, be smart, and then I'll have an answer when they try to shame me.
The sons of David are more known than the sons
of David. Right. Give me 1 second. Okay, in the beginning of what's called the 25th chapter, it says these are also proverbs that the disciples, the men of Chizkiyahu, copied over. So the last 5 chapters of Mishle are a different section. They're added. They are proverbs that Moshe Shlomo HaMelech said, that they were added to proverbs at a later date, a century or two later. I think there's another allusion here, but I'm not finding support for it in the commentaries. We'll stick with the regular pshat, that the pshat is that people look at the parent and they blame him for the child's behavior. At the end of the day, the Gemara says, people say, either blessed is the one that gave birth to such a human being, or cursed is someone who gave birth to such a human being. So people do attribute a child's behavior to their parent. When I saw Trump, one of the things I wondered was, what type of parents did he grow up with? Who brought up a person like this? Trump, Donald Trump. I wondered, you know. I won't say more than that. Pasuk Yud Beis.
Yeah, but what I heard, how he explains his childhood, it doesn't sound that happy. Also, when he explains how his relationship is to his kids, like, he cannot relate to small kids before they reach like adulthood and he can make business with them.
Okay.
No, he's probably a good person, and that's how his father brought him up. But I mean, it sounds a little bit like he was in the military school, but he beat him.
Pasuk Yud Beis.
Okay, he said it was okay to teach him discipline to military guys, but I mean, it sounds a little bit not like a warm, like not a child I would like. You know, yes, money and so on, but still.
Arum Pasuk Yud Beis. Arum Ra'a Ra'a Nistar. The pasuk sounds like it's one of the most obvious psukim. It is probably a pasuk that's very, very, very difficult to apply. A person who is cunning sees bad things coming and they take coverage. Sounds obvious, right? Wrong. There's a phenomenal book called Who Moved My Cheese? I bought this book in Hebrew and English just in order to lend out. And if any of you are curious, let me know. I should, unless it's on loan, but I should have at least one copy at home. And the story is about mice. These mice, two friends, every day, two groups of mice, I don't remember. Every day, there's cheese that appears for them, and they gobble it down. And then, one day, cheese stops appearing for them. So they start looking, what's wrong? Why didn't cheese appear? It's always appeared in this room. Every day it appeared in this room. And they can't figure it out. So they start looking and waiting and searching, and it's not there. And they wait a whole day and it doesn't show up, and they're really upset. So the second day they come back to the same room waiting to see. Cheese has been coming every day as far back as they can remember and just doesn't show up. By the third day, so the primitive mice, they come to the room, they quickly see that there's no cheese there, and they say, we better go see, maybe there's cheese somewhere else. So the sophisticated group says, no, all our lives, cheese has been coming to this room, we're going to wait here. We're going to protest. We're going to make these big signs that say it's not right. It's not fair. This is immoral. And we're going to ensure that cheese keeps coming to this room. And the primitive mice say, we're not sure who you're protesting, but there's no cheese here already 3 days. We're getting pretty hungry. We're going to go looking. And the sophisticated mice says, you have any idea what's lurking in all the other rooms over here? You know what dangers there are out there? You know what could happen to you if you leave? There's always mean cheese coming to this room. I wouldn't give in. We're going to keep finding and make sure cheese comes to this room. And the primitive mice thinks about it, and I don't remember if it's that day or the next day, they say, it ain't happening. So they leave. And then the primitive mice say, we just learned a lesson. Lesson number one. What would I do if I wasn't scared of what might happen? What would I do if I wasn't scared of failure? Very often, the fear of failure freezes us. Now, the primitive mice had been noticing, long before the cheese stopped, that the cheese was diminishing. That day after day, there was a little bit less cheese coming. And the sophisticated cheese hadn't noticed. So the sophisticated mice stand there protesting, and they keep going day after day. And the book is really about how in life, sources of blessings shift. And people very often miss the notes at their job that they might get fired at the end of the year. People very often have hints that things are not going to work out. This company is going to go belly up. And people prefer that confidence that my cheese always came here. And it's not only about a company, it's about many blessings in life. That we have to be prepared for change. Now, I simplified the book. The book is filled with beautiful lessons, all portrayed through these two groups of mice and how they contend with the hardship of change. And the name of the book is Who Moved My Cheese? Now, the whole book is what we just read in these four words. Arum ra'a ra'a nistar. The cunning person sees danger coming and he takes coverage. So that could be seeing danger, seeing that his company might go belly up, seeing that his employer might fire him, seeing that maybe there's a Holocaust coming. You know, my grandfather left Germany. He saw the Holocaust coming. And you look at that and you wonder, how did he do that? How come no one else did it? He was a select few. When he saw the Nazis come to power, he packed his bags and made Aliyah. Wait a second, why didn't everyone else do that? I don't know. I wasn't there. I don't understand where a young man had the courage to make Aliyah and be hungry. He didn't have a slice of bread. When he made Aliyah, he was so poor, he did not have a slice of bread to eat. He came here and he didn't have... No. There were a well-to-do family in Germany. And when he made Aliyah, he didn't have food to eat. So you look at that and you wonder what gave him the courage. Why was he able to see that this wasn't just like any other pogrom? Remember, the Jews in Europe were accustomed to every few years there was a pogrom. Every few years there was another anti-Semite that came to power and they had to deal with him. How did he know this one would be different? I don't know. That's what the Pasuk says, Arum. You have to have a certain cunning to see that things are changing, to see the dangers. And it's not an obvious Pasuk. The application... I don't think it's intuition. I think it's a wisdom. I think it's a street smarts. What?
Right?
That's why I'm saying this pasuk sounds simple. In real life, most people mess up. It sounds so obvious, yet 6 million Jews did not back out of Europe. Now remember, Jabotinsky was going around warning people.
Fire in Europe.
Right? Who listened? Why?
It's happening now too in Europe.
Who knows what's happening in Europe? I don't know. That's what I'm saying. The pasuk is not so obvious. The pasuk is saying you have to have cunning, you have to be able to see it, and then you have to take action. There are three components. And on all three, I think people lack or don't even work on developing this. Yes.
Ah. then he had a failure. Then he passed away. He cannot ask him about the source, but he did in one of his children. He talked about a rabbi like 100 years before. Things were happening, he actually achieved and killed him. What will happen next year, like the Holocaust and the different Aliyot to Israel and so on, so on, described in the Kibbutz. The problem is you don't have the name. Everything was like described, you know, when people would get up their graves, like they have sometimes that people got shot and everybody died and they graves and come back to Israel and this idea that he tried to tell people that he didn't know exactly when, but he tried to tell, you know, this is like a fairly near future, but nobody listened to him.
The conclusion of the pasuk is Pittayim, people who are seduced by their desires, aviru, they continue charging forward, and ne'enashu, they get lost by it. And I think here, the pasuk is revealing to us why we have such a hard time doing this. And that is because we have desires. We want to believe, our job is firm. We want to believe, our family is safe. We want to believe, our location is secure. And so our desires cloud our perception and our ability to decide and take action. Very often we must take action. We must decide. You have an investment account. You keep losing money. You keep investing in the stock market and losing. So what do people tell themselves? This time I'm going to win. This time I'm going to get it right. Maybe. At what point will you say, I don't have the knack for this? I'm just like everyone else who loses money in the stock market. Right? Most people lose. It's the exception that wins. So everyone enters the market thinking they're going to be the exception. And then when people lose, the question is how many times will they have to lose before they say, bad idea. Arum, a person that has cunning, sees it in advance and says, I'm not doing that. But Pittayim, people who are seduced by their desires, and again, these can be all kinds of desires. We very often confuse our dreams with ambition. I dream that if I invest in the stock market and I don't invest a lot of time and I don't do research and I get a hot tip, so then I will make a lot of money. But dreams are not ambition. Dreams can bring about ambition if I'm willing to work. Again, our desires cloud our perception and cloud our judgment. It seems like a very obvious pasuk. If you think about it, all around us are people who are caught by surprise. And most often, life does not really catch you by surprise. Most often, we have a lot of warning signs before things happen, and we have options. If we wake up early enough, we have options. We can affect the outcome. We can affect where reality will take us. When reality hits, and that's what the pasuk says, Pittayim avru, people who allow themselves to be seduced, they keep moving forward on the same path they're on. Success in life almost always comes from change. It's not enough to keep going the same route I've always been going, because if I keep doing the same things, I'll keep getting the same results. Right? I had a friend who got divorced many times in his life. And he came to me once after, I don't know what number, divorce, and he asked me, do you think I should continue trying? So I said, no, you shouldn't continue, you should start. I said, what do you mean? I said, don't continue what you've been doing until now, because that obviously didn't work. You want to start trying a different path, pause, go get some counseling for a number of years, work on figuring out where you went wrong, and then start again, and then see how you can make it work. Don't continue. This isn't a continuation of all the failed attempts. You have to start a new attempt. You can't be avru. You can't continue the same path unless you want the same results. If you want different results, almost always involves change. How much? How drastic? That's the hard part. I also am a fan of gradual change. Wherever possible, you explore things as you have things. Sudden jarring of the system can leave the system totally collapsed. Meaning to wake up one morning and say, I'm going to be a businessman, so I'm closing down my practice. You close down everything you own, and you go and you open a business. Well, maybe that's a dream. Maybe that's not ambition. Maybe I have to do some research. Maybe I have to find out. Where's the right place to open? How's the right place to open? Maybe the first 2 years I should work with a partner. But then I'll split half my profits, right. But I'll split half my losses. And I'll have someone else to share with and to think through and avoid certain mistakes. But a partner might make more mistakes. Right, but they might save you from more mistakes. Get a good partner. Pitaim avu venashu. People who are seduced by their desires keep going down the same path and suffering the same results. Most people, most of their life, review the same mistakes and have the same results. But people aren't willing to take a step out and say, what am I doing wrong? Where are my mistakes? And again, this is a sad recurring theme in people's lives. Look around you. I told you guys the story about my friend who made millions, right? I have a very good friend who has an amazing business. Literally, I think he makes over $1 million a year. And he has nothing in savings because he's a compulsive investor. So he owns oil fields in Kenya. He owns, I don't know what, how many businesses he owns. All of them are losing propositions. So he makes a ton of money and he loses it to the point where he's hit bankruptcy numerous times. Now imagine the guy's prime business, what he does all day, makes a ton of money. He's very good at what he does. Baruch Hashem, he has a lot of, he has the insights he needs, he has siyata deshmaya, he's a real success. But in the bank, all he has is debt. The guy's like severely in debt. And why? Because he can't stop his compulsiveness. He's always looking to make a lot of money quickly, but he's making good money slowly. $1 million a year, his expenses are not even $100,000 a year. If he'd only put the money in the bank, he'd have at least $10 to $20 million now. He doesn't have a penny. But wait a second, isn't it obvious to us standing outside, we can look at it and say, you know, buddy, you keep investing in things you don't know, and you keep losing money that way. And I asked him that once, and he says, you're right. I said, but you're talking to me about your next get-rich-quick deal. If I'm right, then what are you going to do about it? He says, I'm probably going to invest there again. Again, okay? So we need help. The best help is if we can reach the realization ourselves, and if not, sometimes it pays to get help. Sometimes getting help involves going to a therapist or a coach or a life counselor. Sometimes it involves listening to our spouse, sharing with our spouse. People very often hide from their spouse some major decisions they make in order to be able to continue their path of making mistakes. Right? She's not going to tell me I'm wrong, but then who will? So what did we learn today? We discussed when we're satiated, then nothing interests us. We said it's an approach to food, it's an approach to knowledge. We discussed the importance of a home, like a bird. We need a man more than a woman, but everyone needs a place to call home. We discussed the idea, the sweetness of real friendship. We discussed the idea of relying on friends and not relying on family that we're not close to. Two interpretations of what not close to means. We discussed the idea that when our children, the way our children behave is ultimately blamed on us. Whether it's right or wrong is a different question. But at the end of the day, people do blame us. And finally, we discussed the idea that if we have perception and the willingness to change, then we can avoid all kinds of pitfalls in life. Most people spend life giving in to their fears, their weaknesses, their fear of change, and as such people repeat their mistakes. And Shlomo Melech is saying, try to have cunning. One of the greatest impetuses for change is if we're willing to realize what the outcome of continuing our course is. I had a very good friend who had diabetes. And the doctors warned this friend that if they don't get their sugar under control, they would lose their limbs, lose their eyesight, and lose their life. And I was there when this friend of mine lost one leg, and the second leg, and their eyesight, and finally at their funeral. I was there every step of the way. So you look at that, and you say, couldn't you change courses? And the person said, no, I can't. So we look at it and we say, was it worth it? Wait a second. The doctors warned this person where they were headed, but the person felt they can't change courses. This is who they are. It's tough, you know, it's very easy. I believe that one of the tools to changing courses is to look at the outcome. Where will I be? And to convince ourselves of the outcome. And I speak to diabetics before Yom Kippur and I beg them, don't fast. And every year there are diabetics who don't listen to me. And every year I tell them, you know, most diabetics make it out okay. Some have irrevocable damage to different organs and some die every year on Yom Kippur. So almost all diabetics are told by their doctor and their rabbi, don't fast on Yom Kippur. And many don't listen. They say, I'll follow my sugar. And can you see the outcome? Can you recognize where you might end up? That, I think, is one of the great tools to change, if we can think of where we're headed. And this is, again, easier said than done. You want your kid not to smoke? Maybe it's a good idea to discuss with them how it affects their breathing long term. Maybe it's a good idea to show them where people end up. I took my son to see a cancer patient. My son was talking to me about smoking. I said, I want you to meet this relative of ours who is now fighting cancer and who smoked all their lives. Just watch. Come meet them. Come see. You decide. But I want you to be aware. Here's someone you know, and here's where smoking brought them. So the kid comes out and says to me, Abba, aren't they stupid? Right? Why were they smoking? It says on the package, isn't that stupid? Right? Okay, so if a person can see the outcome, look, wait till the kid passes age 20 and he's not smoking. That's going to be the proof if it worked or not. The fact that today the kid says that, that doesn't prove anything yet. We still remains to be seen. But I'm saying one of the tools we can use is to be able to see the outcome to help us choose the right path. Dov, we'll do 1 minute.